Gurumila Mahagat, Susan, and you're all very welcome to the programme today. 51551, if you want to get in contact with us, compliment me or insult the panel. Joking, panel. They are Paul Keogh, Fine Gael TD for Wexford and Minister with Responsibility for Defence. David Cullinan will join us shortly. He's at the Sinn Féin Ardèche in Derry, and he's a Sinn Féin TD for Waterford. Fiona O'Loughlin is a Fianna Fáil TD for Kildare South. Tanya Ward is Chief Executive of the Children's Rights Alliance, and Dr. Cara Augustenberg is Environmental Policy Fellow at UCD. Can I turn firstly to you, Minister Paul Keogh, because you have had a torrid time over the last 24 hours or so with news that the Air Corps' Air Ambulance Service is to close between now and February for days at an end. Also, specific problems with the Coast Guard and so on. But can you tell me, can you explain to people, first of all, what the Air Corps' Air Ambulance Service does, in a nutshell?
Well, the Air Corps Air Ambulance Service commenced on a pilot basis in 2012. It was a Fine Gael-led government, coalition with Labour. And it was, I say, on a pilot basis. And in 2015, the government made a decision to establish it on a permanent basis to be provided by the Irish Air Corps, and with the reserve support of the Irish Coast Guard. To date, there has been over 4,000 missions which have been completed.
Wow. And what are they
particularly
typically?
In around the west of Ireland. It could be from road traffic accidents to somebody having a heart attack. And I will give you the specific one, who's Henry Shefflin. He's a friend of mine in Kilkenny, hurler. His child had an incident with a lawnmower, and the Air Corps ambulance, was helicopter ambulance, was able to land close to his house, take the child away to be provided with the best of care.
So you're telling me that in the past couple of years that thousands of families have benefited from, in emergency situations, from the Air Corps' Air Ambulance Service when the ambulance service simply would not be quick enough.
I would differ with you on that. If it's a road traffic accident and somebody needs to go to head injury, needs to go to Beaumont Hospital, and it happens in Wexford or wherever it is, which is, I know of an accident where there was an accident on the Arklow bypass. The Air Corps helicopter landed, I think, on the bypass itself, and was able to bring that person to Beaumont Hospital for emergency care.
This is a demand-led service. Yeah, but
okay?
So days on end, we will not have an air ambulance service from the Air Corps. Why is that? How did we get to that point?
You won't specifically have it by the Air Corps.
Why?
The reason, I received military advice from the GOC Air Corps, and I think it would be totally irresponsible of me not to accept his advice. But this, as I said, in 2015, when the government made the decision that if the Air Corps weren't able to provide a service, that we would have the backup of the Irish Coast Guard. But in addition to this, on this occasion, I have had been in talks with Minister Simon Harris and the Department of Health and the HSE. So now we have contingency plans in place that this will be fully covered, both by the Air Corps, by the Irish Coast Guard, and also by the Irish Community Rapid Response,
the red helicopter. Why didn't you heed the warnings, though, before now? When were you first warned about this? And this is down to staffing and training and safety.
Staffing and training specifically.
And safety as well.
Retraining. And attention.
Fiona, I didn't interrupt you, and I'm not going to start the programme by interrupting you. I can tell you one thing, Fiona, now. Your government was asked to provide this service back when you were in government with the most booming economy, and you're unable to do it.
All right.
So we provide this service. It was one of the first decisions we made in coming into government in 2011. And this has been an excellent service, which your government refused to do for years.
Hang on a minute. You have outlined correctly.
Instead
of the normal tit-for-tat between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil or Sinn Féin or whoever, let's give the families who are depending on this service an answer, and the people who are working within this service. And when did the officials who are working in the Air Corps Corps and the management and the officers come to you and say, we have a problem here, and if you don't fix it, we'll have to close down the service. When did that first happen?
No, they never said about closing down the service. This service has not been closed down. This service has been taken away for four days per month, the last 4 days of November, the last 4 days of December, the last 4 days of January, and the last 4 days of February. But let me say,
when
if we have a contingency...
Warned?
I was warned and became aware of this a number of months ago, but acted on it. Yes, we did act on it. And that is one of the reasons why we're closing it, because in the months of November, December, January and February, you have less daylight hours. This is not a 24-hour dedicated service. This is a service that is provided through daylight hours, okay?
What did you do to act on it?
Let me say, and the reason why we're doing it at the moment is there's less daylight hours in these months. There's less call-outs in these months. There are less road fatalities in these months. Yeah. There are less, for weather conditions, there's less...
Because I know the Taoiseach has the Ministry for Defence. You're the Minister for saying, when were you specifically first warned?
I was informed of this a number of months ago. Maybe about 3 to 4 months ago. We knew there were challenges.
In summertime.
I didn't want to take this out of service during the summer months.
Specifically, what were you told then?
I hope you understand why I would. I was told that we're going to have to take a number of days out of service during a number of months, and we decided that it would be months where there has been less call-outs. I think this is not about what date and what date and what date. This is about putting a contingency in place. And I think you're forgetting that point, Cormac. And maybe I want to reassure the listeners, and I don't want to frighten the listeners, the people who are listening. We have contingency plans in place where the Irish Coast Guard will be providing a service, and also
Why not?
Because maybe this is about securing the future of the service, and we're not reacting to an incident here. This is about the health and well-being and safety of the people who are operating it, the paramedics that are on board, but and equally as important about the people, the patients who will be on board.
Did you not exert pressure on senior officers to go and fill the role of pilots and to leave their supervisory roles because there were gaps in the system?
I have never stated that we haven't got gaps in the system. I've always been very upfront about the gaps that we have in the system.
So it's a failure to invest.
This is not about a failure to invest. Actually, if you want to talk about investment...
Why are pilots leaving the system then?
Because you should know that pilots are one of the most sought-after professions in the private sector. Let it be from any airline.
But
it's very difficult to keep them. But
why?
Under the Public Service Independent Pay Commission, we have reintroduced the Service Commitment Scheme that Fianna Fáil took away in the last government.
Forget about Fianna Fáil for saying you're in power. Why can't you keep them? We've recommissioned, we've started
a re-entry of Air Corps pilots back into the Air Corps. Former members of the Defence Force who were pilots are now wanting to come back into service.
Is this going to put lives at risk?
No, it will not put lives at risk. And one of the reasons why it will not put lives at risk is because we have the contingency plans in place, and the contingency plans are the Irish Coast Guard helicopter
and also
the Irish Community Rapid Response helicopter.
Is that not going to leave those services thin on the ground? No, it won't be.
This is about bringing the service into the centre of the country. That is based at the moment in Cork, and I absolutely applaud the Irish Community Rapid Response helicopter for the work that they have been doing. I've worked with them at the introduction of them a number of years ago.
Telling me categorically that you only became aware of these training and staffing problems 3 months ago.
No, I'm not putting a specific date on it. I said a number of months ago.
I'm not putting a specific date.
I became aware of these issues. I took action on it, and the reasons why we took the action was to retrain, to bring this service, to concrete this service for the future, to make sure and safeguard it for the future. And I can absolutely hand on heart say to you, Cormac, this afternoon, but more importantly, not to you, but the listeners, the people of the West of Ireland who most rely upon this service.
All over the country.
That this
now.
Service.
It's not just the West of Ireland.
No, it's not just the West of Ireland, but I said, this is there's more call outs in the West of Ireland, where in very remote parts of the West of Ireland over the last number of years.
This is not and a peripheral issue at all. No, no, with respect to the islands
look,
and
don't
so
be picking
this
complicated.
Is a
I
national,
know you want to,
this is a national emergency.
But I want to say, I can absolutely hand on heart guarantee this service from the 1st of March on, when we will have people fully trained. We're taking an operational pause. We have put contingency contingency
okay, we
in
have
place
those points.
With the Irish Coast Guard and the Red Helicopter.
Do you think this could have been avoided in any way?
Well, Cormac, there's only one aspect that I would agree with the Minister on, and that this is a vital service. The fact that there has been 4,000 call-outs, and essentially it's about transferring critically ill people who need urgent medical care. There's no doubt it has saved lives. And to me, there's no doubt that lives would be at risk because
no,
of the decision.
Lives would not
no,
be
hang
risk
on a minute.
Right,
you've had plenty of time
there. I think you're being very
political
now and
saying
that
no, absolutely not.
Totally irresponsible.
At the end of the day, acute emergency frontline services are being impacted by this decision. And that's completely wrong. And this follows on from what happened during the year in terms of two of our naval ships being docked. So the heart of the issue is recruitment and retainment in terms.
So do you pay them more? Do you pay pilots more? Is that what you do?
I think within the whole Defence Forces, and I know this argument is, and debate indeed, is a long-running one. I think that the conditions that are Air Corps and that our soldiers are working under are completely wrong, both in terms of salary and conditions. Only recently, the Foreign Affairs and Defence Committee were down in the Curra camp looking at conditions that were there, and they were absolutely appalling.
Well,
and
this
is why
this is an issue for you, why wasn't this highlighted in your budgetary, your alternative budget? Defence Forces never even got a mention in your alternative
that
budget
is
for Fianna Fáil.
Don't talk
we
over.
Have very,
correct.
We
I am
have
absolutely
very strong
correct.
Policies in relation to supporting our defence forces.
Okay. So you say it's
not when it comes to your alternative budget.
Can I get the reaction of the other politician, David Cullinan, on this one? Is it simply that you have to improve conditions and that you have to increase pay in order to keep pilots in this service, David Cullinan?
Well, I think that has to be part of it, Cormac, because what we're hearing is that a lot of the problems are down to training and staffing. I think the first point I'd make is that the Minister should be less defensive on this issue. I think we all accept that the service is a vital service. It's a very successful service. We know last year that it was used in 159 car crashes and 15 child hospital transfers. And I do accept that the Minister has put in place a backup plan, but that's a very short-term plan. It is the case that concerns have been raised now for a long number of months. I think it is extraordinary that the Minister is not able to say exactly when he became aware of the concerns. He does say a number of months. What we need to do now is to focus on what are the medium to long term solutions here. And if it is pay, obviously that has to be looked at. In any situation where there is a discussion on pay, it's a negotiation. It's up to the HSE and they have to step up to the plate here to put in place the medium to long term solutions, because we can't have going forward this stopgap measure and using the Irish Coast Guard services for what is such a vital service that everybody accepts as a vital service. Nobody's interested in Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael or Sinn Féin having a row over the airwaves on this issue. It's a vital service. We all accept
but
that. It does save lives.
There
and
is contingency.
It is up to the government and the minister. There is, and I accept that, but that is a stopgap measure, as I said. It is good that there is a stopgap measure in place. It's good that this has been done in the very short term to ensure that at least the service is still available. But the minister has a responsibility to deal with the challenges that are in this area. And as he said himself, that they relate to pay, they relate to staffing, they relate to training. It is up to the government to sort them out. This government has been in government for 8 years. They can't blame anybody else. They have to take responsibility themselves.
Okay, a texter says, shameful that a section of our military do not have the manpower or equipment to do their job. Usual excuses from ministers. This also relates, I suppose, that text to the Coast Guard. The story broke yesterday that some of their operations will have to be suspended because of inadequate equipment. And I think they don't have useful or adequate life jackets. Is that correct?
Well, that's a matter for the Department of Transport. It doesn't come under my remit. But let me state, this is not about the equipment of the Defence Force not being able to provide the equipment. We have the equipment. It is down to manpower. It's down to retraining and
but the Coast
upskilling.
Guard is.
My understanding with the Coast Guard, it is life jackets. Now, yeah. I'm not fully sure of the exact circumstances around it. I only became aware of it yesterday.
It sounds like a joke that the Irish Coast Guard doesn't have proper life.
But let me say that the Irish Coast Guard is the remit under the Department of Transport. And
but you're here
it should be
government.
Collective
and
responsibility.
But I've no doubt. Yeah. This story only broke Cormac yesterday evening. I'm not fully aware of the full circumstances behind that. But I don't know. And I was very surprised to hear it.
I can see the surprise on your face.
When I heard it, first of all.
Is it shameful, though? Is it wrong?
Well, it is wrong. Because these are voluntary. Volunteers.
Yeah.
Like I have the remit of the civil defence,
yeah.
And I know that they are very well equipped. I was delighted only recently to be announcing another €1 million under dormant account funds to buy.
Am I wrong to say that I detect some embarrassment on your face? But
yeah, no, it is. I was like, yeah, this is wrong. This is wrong because. Yeah. But there must be some reason behind it. Maybe there must be some standard reason that has been raised internationally or nationally. I'm not sure.
I don't know, Cormac.
But let me say. I think it is only right that we look after volunteers, volunteer-led organisations, that we depend on volunteers, that we do equip them to the very best of equipment.
Some would say, Tanya, that we're just the public services are busting at the seams, and this is just another indicator of it.
I mean, that's right. I think, you know, when you look at public services in Ireland, it's a tale of two stories. So, you know, in the last budget, we had an announcement to invest in a national school hot meals programme, you know, a first for the country. Big investments being made in a national childcare scheme. I mean, these deep developments actually happened in mainland Europe 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I do think it's down to lack of investment over time. That's why we are where we are. I mean, throughout the health system, there's a big challenge when it comes to waiting lists, particularly when you look at, let's say, mental health services for vulnerable young people in some parts of the country. It's down to just not being able to find the right staff, but it also is down to just not having the resources in some places as well.
Okay. Well, look, we'll come to that more in just a second. Cormac, your tone about the heli service is scaremongering. They have an interim contingency plan. You should be focusing on the structural issues of retention and pay in the Defence Forces and the lack of a dedicated air ambulance services, Adrian, in Dublin. And one more, appalling that the state has to rely on community-funded services. This move may not be appreciated by people in the south of the country who raised money for this service, is that texter. We'll take a very, very quick break and then we'll be back with the Youth Assembly on Climate Change and the challenge they present to politicians.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
51551. It's important to read this one from Fergal Conlon. The Irish Community Rapid Response have two helicopters. The service will be retained in Cork in addition to the Roscommon service, says Fergal. And David in Dublin says, pilots get training, then leave. Nurses get training, then leave. Doctors get training, then leave. None should be allowed to leave until cover is available. Therefore, ongoing training is a must. It has to be continuous. There cannot be gaps. Lives are at stake, says David. Now, I'm with Paul Keogh, David Cullinan, Fiona O'Loughlin, Tanya Ward and Dr. Cara Augustenberg. And Cara Augustenberg, I come to you because I think we were all generally really impressed with the Youth Parliament and the recommendations they came forward with yesterday on climate change. But I would say that some TDs will be saying, those pesky youngsters, how dare they expect us to recommend or to implement these recommendations? Do you think they will be implementing these recommendations?
That's a really good question. I think they did an incredible job. They prepared really hard for this, and I had the privilege of talking to some of them as part of their training for this, and there were five working groups that looked at the categories of energy, economics, farming, environment, and education, and they each proposed two recommendations. And what was really interesting about those recommendations is that they were very tangible. So we've seen a government that has recently been proposing a lot of issues around governance and policy, but not really tangible actions that reduce emissions. And what the Youth Assembly proposed would actually have an impact on emissions. So I think that's a huge lesson. And I would hope that every political party in their manifestos for the next election will address these 10 recommendations.
Can we be real for a second? They're not going to really implement Number two, ban the importation of fracked gas and invest solely in renewables. That's
I
not
think
happen,
if they if they're serious about climate action, banning imported fracked gas from the US is a key part of that. And we had in the Youth Assembly, we had the doctors for the environment in the United States imploring us to stop importing this gas that is destroying communities across America.
Well,
so
you be
this
my
is a global
guest.
Issue.
You be my guest, Cara O'Gustomer. You go around to the politicians there, not me, and you try and get a guarantee that they'll ban fracked gas.
We banned fracking on the island of Ireland in 2017, and now we somehow think it makes sense to bring in imported frack gas from America. There's a huge disconnect there. So if we're serious about this, if we recognize the fracking has environmental impacts and has an impact on climate change, then we don't import it either, and we don't need it. We can get off gas in the next 15 years.
On behalf of the youth of Ireland, let's work together on the politicians on the panel here. You turn to Fiona O'Loughlin there first. And Fiona, on behalf of Fianna Fáil, you tell the young people of Ireland that you, on behalf of your party, will not import, if you're in government, any fracked gas.
I'm not a spokesperson in this area. I'm not an expert in this area. But I felt that the young people made a very valid argument, and I certainly, on a personal level, would support that. I think that...
Does the party have a position on it?
But the recommendations that... The 10 recommendations that they made, I thought a lot of them were very, very practical. Even listening last night to the Late Late Show and listening even to the one in relation to the doors and fridges, I thought, you know, that is so sensible. That is so practical. Something that I took away from listening as well was that the young people there yesterday really made their day in Leinster House count. And it made me recommit myself that I need to make every day count. They don't want honeysuckle
words from you or anybody
don't.
Else.
They
want
they don't.
Commitments
they
from you as a party.
They don't want lip service.
If you can say to me, I can't give you a guarantee on behalf of our party because we don't have a position on it, that's fair enough. Is that what you're saying? On fracked gas and importation, are you saying I don't know what the Fianna Fáil position is?
No, I'm not saying that.
So what is it?
But things evolve, right? And I'm saying that at this point in time, I feel that we should not be bringing in fracked gas.
Well,
and that's as far as I can go with that.
But then you should leave your party if they support it.
So, okay, let's... David Cullinan, can you give me Sinn Féin's position on number four? Young people of Ireland, wait till you hear this guarantee from David Cullinan. The recommendation is to implement a tiered tax on emissions from large companies, including those under capital emissions trading scheme.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of the recommendations, and I want to first of all welcome the recommendations. I think, yes, they're quite radical, but they're also necessary if we're serious about climate action. We agree, and we've said for some time, that the burden has to be shifted from householders and put onto the big polluters and corporations. And obviously, revenue and taxes is one way to do that. Also looking at carbon credits, which I think is a nonsense in the current situation as well, where we have to make sure the big corporations reduce their carbon emissions. I also want to make the point about the fracked gas situation, because Fianna Fáil did not support that at the Oireachtas Committee on Communications. We had full hearings on the issue. Fianna Fáil were not in a position to say that they would oppose the importation of fracked gas. We did. We were very, very clear. I'm speaking from the Sinn Féin Ardèche here in Derry. We have Ard Corlam motions which very clearly set out that we will not just ban fracked gas in the south but also in the north. It will be a clear part of any negotiation of a government in the north, and also ban the importation of fracked gas. And could I just say on that issue, Cormac, very quickly, the Oireachtas Committee, in the same way that the young people did when they listened to the experts, we had scientists, leading scientists in this state and leading climate change experts in this state from universities, from institutes of technology come before us, all saying that importing fracked gas is bad. And there is no point locking the next generation and locking any part of the country in terms of jobs into something which is of a different era.
But all those experts, David, say that we need a carbon tax as well, something Sinn Féin railed against, an increase in carbon tax in the last budget. I mean, are we all guilty of being hypocrites here?
No, well, first of all, not all experts are in favour of carbon tax increases, but some of them say, yes, it's one of the issues that needs to be used. We make the argument that carbon tax increases in the absence of alternatives will not help people and accommodate people and enable people to make the changes that they need. If you, for example, have your house heated through oil or gas, a carbon tax increase, if you don't have the money to change and retrofit, will just put more money on the cost of heating your home. What we want is, and I can say this without fear or favour, when we publish our election manifesto, it will have the most ambitious public transport spend in the history of the state. In the same with housing, we need housing that's public and affordable housing, but also housing built to the highest energy rating. And I think that what was good from the recommendations from the young people is that there was an urgency about them. They're all necessary. We have to face up to the reality that we have to do an awful lot more, and not just focused on carbon tax increases, which for some people is all they can offer. But actually enabling people, enabling householders, enabling people who live in rural Ireland, enabling working people to be able to make the transition that they want to make from higher carbon to lower carbon.
It's funny you say that because, Tanya, an awful lot of people, Tanya Ward, are putting pressure on politicians now because they see this as a real live issue. We saw it in the last local election, and it's going to be it's an issue in terms of children's rights as well, I would say, to guarantee absolutely. The future of our children.
Well, there's no other actually group in society globally who's going to be more affected by climate change. If you think about the kind of the changes in the environment and the temperature, diseases like malaria spread, it's children actually that are going to pay the price. And I suppose it really struck me about the young people of yesterday. It was a brilliant initiative, but we actually need to bring young people closer into the political system and give them a say in how we do politics. And the easiest way to do that is give 16 and 17 year olds the possibility to vote, you know, in your local European elections. It would really engage them in politics, but it'd also give them a say in environmental issues. Because what really struck me about what they had to say as well yesterday was they weren't just focusing on the big issues like fracking and taxes. They also were talking about very practical issues. Fiona, as you said, was sustainable living. They had some fantastic ideas that you'd have a health warning on your products to tell you how sustainable your product is. And I think young people themselves are actually going to be great ambassadors for sustainable living. I think we ourselves as adults, we struggle with that. We don't want to give up our car. We don't want to give up our exotic avocados on a Saturday morning. But what really came through was the young people are saying that's just not good
enough. But Joan Brady, Tanya's text from Dundalk to say, what about mobile phones and all kinds of iPods, etc., that harm the atmosphere that the young people use day and night? I admire the young people, but they need to think about their own habits, which are harmful. I take it, Joan, you're texting on a mobile phone as well. is that a fair point?
We're all on mobile phones. It's not just young people who are on mobile phones and engaging with technology. I don't know if that's really fair. But I think with young people, I think the thing to engage them on is to think about the costs of some of these proposals that they put forward and the impact on lower incomes. That was coming through yesterday. People didn't want people on the breadline to fall behind. You've really got that from young people. But that's what I think the politicians need to do now. They need to look at how practical are these recommendations? How can we implement them? And if I was a politician, because there's very hard decisions that need to be made, I would be using the groundswell of political support coming from young people. And that's following through, I think, into their parents to help me make those tough decisions, because those young people are going to be voting. They might be voting at 16 or 17, but they will be voting at the age of 18. And they'll be very angry if we haven't taken that kind of action. We have 11 years, basically, to take action now before climate change.
But look at what people are doing, though. We're all pointing the finger at each other, even at the children. Liz says, how many times do these kids shower each day or wash their hair? I speak as a grandmother who knows what kids do. Maybe spending too long in the shower. It's all about behaviour, isn't it?
This is so insulting for these young people who have worked so hard to understand the science and the policy and to present themselves in the doll. The truth is that every one of us make an environmental impact all the time. The minute we turn on our lights, the minute we would go to work, everything we eat has an environmental impact. So to cast blame on any one person is completely unfair. And when you look at what we need to do to change and to be more sustainable, the biggest things we can do are system changes. So decarbonization. decarbonising our electricity system and our transport system. And that takes political leadership. And that's why we need to elect people who can facilitate that. Because as an individual, it's very hard for an individual not to have an impact. It's pretty much impossible. And the framing from our current government has been very much putting it on the individual.
Well, you've just framed my question to the minister very well there, talking about systems change. Can I just, before I talk to you about the recommendations, can I congratulate you and your government on increasing beef exports to China tenfold? That was an announcement made this week. But how does that sit with climate change, I wonder, and your strategy?
Well, from the constituency that I represent, Cormac, the exportation of beef is really important for beef farmers, and absolutely, I defend it, no problem.
But
let me say for a second.
So for your constituency and all the farmers, is a great story that beef exports to China is going to increase tenfold. That's what you're saying, really.
For an island of maybe less than 5 million people, we as an island and the farmers on this island are feeding almost 500 million people. So do we stop farming in this country then? What are the rest of the world going to do? We are feeding over 500 million people. I don't want anyone to forget that matter. But let me say, yesterday was a fantastic day. And the Taoiseach said yesterday that he will meet, my understanding is that he will meet a delegation from the people that were there yesterday. He will talk to the Cancorla on the recommendations. But the recommendations that were made were some fantastic, and I agree with my Fianna Fáil colleague on this, or my opposition TD on this, when they say about the fridge doors in supermarkets. Now, if I went to my local supermarket and said you have to put a door on all of those fridges, but yes, it's a very good idea, but I don't think it should be expected that they do it straight away, or there should be a lead-in period. And there is some really good practical ideas
Are you not being grossly hypocritical?
No.
It's easy to talk about fridge doors and so on, but let's get down to brass tacks. I mean, how in the name of God can you reduce carbon emissions if you're to increase beef exports by 10? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to you at all. You explain the sense to me.
But our beef exports are feeding millions of people across the world. It's really important to our local economy, it's really important to our national economy. The agriculture is a really, really...
Look at Carrow, Gustenburg, head in hand, farming kind of stuff.
What are you going to do with it? Do you close down every farm down across the country then?
Give them other options. We know that beef is not a profitable sector right now.
Do you stop producing beef then?
No, you give them other options to diversify. So there is lots of options around horticulture
diversity. There's loads of people. I'm a beef eater. I will continue to eat beef. My family are beef eaters. They will continue. And I can tell you...
You won't reduce it at all.
No, I'm not saying I won't reduce it. Then you don't give a toss about climate action. I think that's very clear from your comments. You're absolutely wrong. But I think we have to take all of these into context. And we don't take any of these recommendations in isolation. Then we have to look at look at the impacts of the recommendations. Look at be on our farming community, on our housing, construction of roads or whatever, rural and urban communities. But farming is a very important part of the economy of this country, and I will defend that absolutely 100%. They're going through a very difficult time and period at this time, and I really hope that beef prices do increase. And I know we have to give them other alternatives. Don't hog the farm now.
There's Fiona O'Loughlin who wants to weigh in here. There's an awful lot of farmers in Kildare
as well. There are, and I come from a farming background myself, and I think that I do agree that our beef farmers have come through a very difficult year, and many of them actually have started to look at diversifying, because quite simply they weren't able to make an income for themselves and their family, and we have to look at ways that farmers can support themselves. So I think that the deal with China was a good deal for Irish farmers, but I would also encourage farmers to look at other ways of diversifying. And I know that one of the recommendations that the young people made yesterday was in relation to forestry, which my own family farm, we have forestry, and also in relation to hemp.
And they once said 10% of the farm aside for forestation. Is that a good idea?
I think it is a good idea.
Is it workable?
Yeah, it is workable. Yeah.
With incentives, it would be workable.
Yeah, it is.
And but you're against reducing the herd number then. Because I have a texter here. Look, there RTE go again, flogging the beef farmer. what the explosion in the size, what about the explosion in the size of the dairy herd, which is never mentioned from an angry bee farmer? Is that a fair point, Cara?
Yeah, I'm actually more worried about the intensification than what's going on with beef. And, you know, Minister Keogh talks about how we feed the world. But the truth is a lot of the dairy milk powder is going to infant formula in China. So here we are in Ireland trying to get people to breastfeed their babies more while our tax euros are going to fund marketing around getting Chinese mothers to buy Irish infant formula. It's really hypocritical, and nobody talks about it.
It gives you the quality of the dairy farmer in Ireland when you see China looking for to export dairy formula.
Yeah, because they have their own issues around plastics and infant formula.
But let me say, I can see the planting of forest, and now you have part of my education was in forestry and a forestry background. There's different parts of Ireland that are more suitable to the growing of forestry. So you take like 10% does sound very high to an agricultural holding, let it be in Kildare, let it be in Wexford or Tipperary, really good, farming land where you can get the best out of the soil. Mm-hmm. Where there's other parts of the country, I know people, I've had this argument, people in Leitrim say, the whole of Leitrim is nearly full in forestry. I'm not sure if what percentage of Leitrim is.
You don't care either. You don't care.
But I do care. But there's different parts of the country that are more suitable to the growing of forestry than what there is other.
Fair
really
point.
Good
what about this, David Cullinan? You're waiting patiently there in Derry from John in Ratoath in County Meath. He says, if Chinese people want to eat beef, best they eat grass-fed beef that is among the most carbon-efficient than eat Brazilian beef reared at the expense of the Amazon. Stop farm shaming, he says. Is that a fair point?
No, I don't believe it's fair, first of all, to say that people are shaming farmers or anything like that. The obvious point to make here is that there has to be changes right across the board. Individual behaviour has to change. But we also are going to see massive changes in farming in the next 5, 10 and 20 years. We can't put our heads in the sand. And I think what the young people were looking at was looking down the road at food security, at sustainable agriculture, and looking at what alternative uses need to be put in place to make sure that farming can survive. Because there is going to be massive changes coming. Some of the proposals they did put forward was greater afforestation. That's actually been looked at in the context of cap payments and linking cap payments to afforestation. And I agree, not every part of the country is suitable for growing trees, but trees and forests act as a carbon sink. The young people also looked at hemp harvesting, which is something that's used in other countries. Mm. And what they're actually looking at is practical solutions. Nobody is saying that we shouldn't farm. Nobody is saying that we shouldn't produce any beef. But I think people will raise eyebrows and say, well, hang on a second here. On the one hand, we're signing up to the Mercosur trade deal, which is resulting in the Amazon being cut down to allow for huge amounts, hundreds of thousands of tons of beef coming from Brazil and South America that has not certainly been farmed in the best environmental way and is damaging the Amazon coming into Europe, including coming into Ireland, while at the same time exporting to China. That doesn't make sense.
Okay.
So I think we have to have a debate about the changes which are necessary in agriculture to make it more sustainable for farmers. Let's be honest about where it needs to be and not, I think, as the minister is doing, just putting his head in the sand.
Can you let me move on?
Because
I want to talk about Sinn Féin, but I'll read two texts first of all. Fair play to Paul, says this texter. I'm sick to death of this lefty liberal climate mob that only follow the leader, that expect us all to never question what is going on. Eating beef does not equate to giving a toss, to not giving a toss about the environment. How ridiculous is that, texter? And Andrea says, why do farmers not grow all the things we import instead of sending beef to China? We would save a whole lot of food miles, and we can do without avocados and strawberries at Christmas, says Andrea. Can I come to you? You have to be all shades of green, David Cullinan. You're at the Ardesh, the Sinn Féin Ardesh there in Derry, which started yesterday evening. And you need to be all shades of green in every type of way, don't you, to do better at election time than you have done at the previous elections?
Well, the one thing I'm absolutely certain of, Cormac, is that people don't want politicians looking back to previous elections. What they want them to do is focus on the future and put forward policies which work. And we will see over the next number of months all parties produce their election manifestos. And you're right, there has to be proper scrutiny about what all parties are proposing. And certainly when it comes to environmental issues, Sinn Féin will be very strong in what we put forward. And I think the standout items that will come from our manifesto will be, we will unleash in our manifesto the biggest single public housing and affordable housing plan the state has ever seen, because it's needed. We need really ambitious spend on public transport. We have lots of parts of the country which don't have public transport. We don't have proper connectivity even between some cities.
All parties will say they'll have the same type of policies. But
all parties won't, Cormac. Yeah. All parties won't. And you said earlier as well.
Where are your red lines, though? In terms of, I mean, you're pushing a United Ireland, that agenda yet again. Is that some type of a red line for Sinn Féin to go into any type of a coalition or confidence and supply agreement after the next election?
Well, a United Ireland is not just some agenda. A United Ireland is a clear and a legitimate political aspiration that's held by many people across this island. In our view, partition has failed, and what we want to see is a real republican politics, which is about delivering for all the people, including working class communities. And you see, you can't judge every party and you can't judge every politician by simply comparing us to those who've been in power. I want to see the Fine Gael ministers replaced with Sinn Féin ministers. I'm very clear that the only time you will see a proper public housing programme cutting rents for people who are paying huge rents, dealing with the cost of childcare, is when you have a change of government
reality,
and a Sinn Féin
David,
government supported by others.
The reality at the moment is you would have to sit around the table with either Fianna Fáil or Labour or Fine Gael or Social Democrat or whatever Green ministers. Now, would you be willing to do business with Fine Gael? Your stated position, I believe, is that you would enter coalition even as a minority partner. Is that still the position Sinn Féin holds?
Unlike Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, what we have said is that once the election is over, the people, first of all, will cast their judgment. We will talk to any and all parties, but we will only do so on the basis of getting a strong programme for government. You see, very often the debate is about the numbers and not about the policies. And I certainly, and Sinn Féin will not be,
but we will not
sign up to a programme for government that leaves communities behind, that doesn't deal with the real challenges that working people face, that doesn't have a big ambitious public housing plan or a solution to the housing crisis. And you said it earlier in your programme. Every week on your programme, there's a challenge in public services because we don't provide the resources. And you either have a government that's committed to genuine Republican politics, which delivers for all classes of people, or you have parties which represent a cause of the privileged class in government.
Okay,
that's
we'll
not what
see,
I want.
Though. We'll see. One word answer from Fianna Fáil. Would you do a coalition with Sinn Féin afterwards?
Absolutely not. And I think while they are flirting with Fine Gael, when they're actually talking about going into government here, it's very hypocritical when you see they won't take up their seven seats in Westminster.
Answer.
And also when you see
Would you take an oath of allegiance to the Queen?
I would if I thought it would make a difference to my country.
Would you do business with Sinn Féin after the election?
Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has stated this absolutely categorically, that we will not be doing any business with Sinn Féin after the next general election. But I'll tell you one thing, Cormac. Okay. Shame on Sinn Féin for going to Derry to have their Ardesh when they are unable to provide to the citizens of Northern Ireland the assembly up there. For over 1,000 days now, Stormont has not been up in room. So shame on them.
They're
in going
well
to Derry.
Those arguments
shame
back
on
forth.
Them. Back
okay,
on Derry.
No, no, we have those arguments ad nauseum. I want to move on and talk about the rights of children and how they are or not being vindicated. That's after the break. We've had some week of it.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
You're welcome back to the programme. Can I ask you, Tanya Ward, of the Children's Rights Alliance, to look back at this week in one way and say, look, we had the best of the young people of Ireland in terms of the Youth Parliament, but other issues dominated the airwaves and print journalism as well in terms of the bullying issues that came forward on Liveline, child homelessness, 86,000 people, children, on waiting lists in terms of the health service as well.
Yeah.
We have explicit rights for children in this country. A simple question, is the government failing to vindicate those rights, do you think?
In some areas, yes. And in other areas, the government is doing very well. I mean, what struck me about this week, you know, it was really about the children of yesterday, the children of today and the children of tomorrow. You saw with the primetime programme on the Scouts, how children of yesterday were failed in the scouting organisations. A very familiar story where paedophiles found themselves in an organisation where they had access to children, where they abused them, where they got themselves into senior leadership positions where they could frustrate any attempts to protect children. Unfortunately, this is a story that you see globally in relation to different organisations that were working with children, and it's the same story that we're familiar with
here. But that's in the past in a way. How is the state failing children? Yeah. Today.
Well, you see, the state today is still dealing with the children of the past as well. If you look at the remit of the Department of Children and Youth Affairs, the minister is dealing with children that grew up through the mother and baby homes, who were you had the false adoptions that took place, still dealing with abuse survivors from the Ryan report and the industrial schools. And I suppose the scouting story is just another part of that story. And we have to get ahead of that. I mean, we have to make sure that the victims of the scouting abuse are their needs are actually met. And that might mean down the line there needs to be an independent review once we get to see the report that comes from the independent Ian Elliott. She's doing a piece of work for the Scouts. In terms of the children of today, I suppose what really struck me was that you had a number of reports that came out. The Oireachtas Committee on Housing and Planning, the Oireachtas Committee on Children and Youth Affairs, two very good reports really documenting the impact of the housing crisis on children.
But saying very basic stuff in one way, when you simplify, that it's not okay to leave children in hotel rooms along with their families for years on end.
Yeah, that's right. But what was really coming through, I think, from the committees is that we actually have to take action now. Because I think one of the challenges with the housing crisis, if you talk to people in the middle of it, they say, look, it'll be okay once, you know, in Dublin we get the international student accommodation on stream, that will bring down the price of rents. Actually, the price of rents have gone up. And all these kind of incremental steps that we're trying to rely on to solve the housing crisis isn't working. Because we need something really radical, a big public building programme of housing that working people and people on low incomes can benefit from. That's the only way we're going to solve it. And I think the next programme for government, that'll be one of the main things that's likely to land in it, is the need for a public building programme. Because the cost of the housing crisis on children at the moment, what's coming up from all the reports when children talk about themselves, they feel very institutionalised, even living in the best quality family hubs. And that's one of the things that we were quite shocked about as a movement. Even if the hub had great services in place, because children aren't in their own home.
So what do you mean they feel institutionalised?
Well, you see, if you don't have own door accommodation and your parent isn't cooking a meal and you're doing your homework and you invite your friend home to play with you in your house and you're not part of a local community, and instead you're in an institution, you come in every day, you have to sign in, you have to tell people where you're going, you have to share facilities with other people. If you live like that for long periods of time, children become very institutionalised and they really feel shame, actually. They're afraid to tell people that this is how they're living, particularly when they, you know, they're 12, 13, 14, and they won't tell a friend why I can't go to that birthday party because they just can't get across the city, the 2 hours across the city to get back to their old community. And I think what really I'm worried about, I think, for these children is there is a generation of children that are becoming very demotivated, particularly in schools. And you hear that if you're living in homeless accommodation for 18 months and you're doing the journey every day, an hour and a half across the city to get to school, what you find is they're becoming very demotivated, they're losing out, they're losing friends, and they're children who can drop out of school down the line.
Okay, there are so many issues that we will come back to on this programme and other programmes as well, because we've run out of time. But just for Cara Augustenberg, Brian Lally has been on to say that tonight's Country Time will be climate and environment themed. John Prine on strip mining, Nancy Griffith on farming, he says, and Johnny Cash on floods, just at 11 o'clock on RT Radio 1, so you'll enjoy that.
RT did a really good job this week, by the way, just to say, in terms of the whole climate agenda. So well done.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much, Fiona O'Loughlin, Paul Keogh, David Cullinan, Tanya Ward and Dr. Cara Augustenberg. Until next Saturday at 1 o'clock, I'm way over time. Apologies. Slán agus beannacht.
And Saturday with Cormac O'Hara was produced by Tom Donnelly. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon. Research was by A.B. Philbin Bowman. And sound was by Nikki Dempsey.